Jonathan Porritt's been thinking about the future for decades. He first became involved in environmental sustainability in the early 1970s. He set up a forum for the future in the mid-90s, and he spent 2000 to 2009 chairing the United Kingdom's Sustainable Development Commission. But his latest effort is a little less action and a little more conversation. Porritt has written a book.
His new book is called The World We Made, a work of speculative fiction. A 50-year-old history professor describes how the world changed between 2014 and 2050. Our colleague Ross Reynolds sat down with Porritt, and he asked him why he decided to dive into the genre of speculative fiction.
I just got tired of writing books that started at the point where we are, and then things get a bit worse, and then they get much worse, and then they get really bad. And then you kind of try and turn it all around psychologically so that your reader or your listener isn't completely depressed with what you're saying. And that kind of way of doing it seemed to me not really to be terribly effective. I've just witnessed so many occasions when either the printed word or the spoken word actually disempowers people rather than gives them a sense of hope about how we can still make this good, sustainable world happen.
And yet, as Alex McKay, your figure, looks back from the year 2050, he certainly sees many ways in which we failed.
Oh, yes. Well, that's, I'm sorry to say, completely inevitable. And that is the price of failure on the part of our politicians over the last 20 years. I think it's a bit hard to go any further back than that, because I suppose they could plead ignorance before that. But from 1992 onwards, that was when the Earth Summit took place in Rio de Janeiro, there's no excuse on the grounds of ignorance. They knew absolutely everything they needed to know back in 1992 to instigate a process of radical progressive change. And essentially, practically nothing has happened in the intervening 20 years. And that means that there are going to be some really tough times ahead of us on all sorts of counts, which we'll have to navigate our way through before we get into this much better world that I think lies ahead.
Including Alex Kay looking back from the perspective of the year 2050 and remembering cyber terrorist attacks on nuclear plants.
Yes, well, I don't think anyone would deny that what we're seeing right now is a very frightening ramping up of the capabilities of cyber terrorists and a consequent investment or a necessary expenditure on the part of all our governments to defend against that terrorism. But the truth is that many of these terrorists are getting one step ahead of us, and I'm very nervous for the future in this regard. So for me, when you have very big, dangerous technologies like nuclear power stations, my fear is that they are still a target for terrorists, not in terms of a direct military attack, as it were, but more of an attack on the operating software of those nuclear facilities in order to take them out.
We'll get to some of the positive aspects of the world we made in a moment. But also, perhaps the most frightening part to read about is the idea that we will look back from the year 2050 to great famines, to global riots over great famines. Is that because you feel as though climate change has gone so far that this will be inevitable? Agriculture will not be able to adapt?
There's a huge nexus between food, water, soil, and climate. And we haven't really thought our way through that as yet. So there's no doubt that accelerating climate change is going to impact on the food production capabilities of many, many countries around the world. And as that happens, our current food production systems are going to be very vulnerable to that climate change, very vulnerable to water shortages, very vulnerable to soil erosion. And because we haven't yet put in place the systems which will give us improved protection against all those vulnerabilities, we are going to see some pretty bad times on the food availability front through till, I think it's 2025 in the book. And after that rather horrendous shock to the system, we begin to get things sorted out.
Jonathan Porritt is my guest. He's talking about his new book, The World We Made. It's speculative fiction. It purports to be the journal of a 50-year-old professor in the year 2050, looking back at what happened between now and then. And in some ways, Alex McKay looks back from that vantage point and sees success in our future. What kind of areas does he see success in?
Practically everything, I'm happy to say. We really do get very smart indeed about using the new technology. which is already with us, but deploying it at scale and so fast that it allows us to produce all the energy that we need in the world without the horrendous cost that our current energy systems are imposing on the environment and on people. And energy is the key to this. It's without energy, you can't hope to make the world work for people, whether in rich or poor countries. So the fact that today we're 90% dependent on our use of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and gas, and in 2050, we will be 90% dependent on renewable sources of energy. That's solar, wind, biomass energy, hydro energy, some marine technologies, tidal stream, marine power, and so on, and some geothermal in parts of the world. That is our energy mix in 2050. And it's a massive transition, but it's that transition that makes everything else possible, because without that, we would still be stuck in a rapidly warming world, which would make it impossible to do all the other good things we need to do.
You also imagine that in our future, we'll see a convention on biological diversity. You're saying the recognition that it's important and taking steps to make sure we preserve it?
I think what we're waking up to right now is that the damage we do to other creatures and other habitats eventually bounces back and hurts us. So we know that every time we undermine the resilience of a natural system, we get hurt. I've got a little sort of thesis in the book which says that eventually the group that defends the rainforests in Brazil more ardently than any other group are the soya growers in Brazil. And that's because they wake up to the rather obvious fact that without the rainforests, there's no rain. And without rain, there's no soya crops in Brazil. So this is becoming now part and parcel of what successful economics looks like, that we understand how nature underpins that wealth creation. Unless you keep those natural functions intact and productive and in good heart, well, much of the wealth that we create today will disappear. So I love the idea of eventually business people getting really wise to this and joining the ranks of the campaigners to actually say to governments, guess what? The entire future of our industry depends on this natural capital, this set of assets, if you like, that we have here for our use, which we have to keep intact for our own interests. Now, lots of environmentalists won't like to hear it put that way, because perhaps they'd like to think that we protect nature for its own sake. But we haven't done a very good job of that so far, and I suspect we'll only do it when we understand our true self-interest in this.
The hazards of speculating on the future is that the present has a way of catching up all too quickly. The last item on your imagined chronology in the year 2049 is a major report from the ACLU on internet privacy. Have the Edward Snowden revelations about NSA violations of personal privacy kind of outstripped your fictional account?
There are at least three things that have already happened which weren't meant to happen in the book for quite some years to come. So that is indeed one of the hazards you face. And I guess it's fair to say, I think I projected that what is happening now as a consequence of the revelations from Edward Snowden would be happening in 2017, 2018. So it's at least 4 years. I'm 4 years behind what's already happening.
So what are the other parts of the world we made that might require asterisks in future editions?
Well, one which is quite funny in a way is the creation of artificial meat. Now, this isn't going to be everybody's cup of tea, if I can put it like that. The thought of artificial meat, that's meat cultured in laboratories using cultured protein, DNA. We can't go on increasing the amount of meat that we eat in the world for a growing number of people year after year after year. It's simply not possible to find the available landmass to make that work. So one of the technology breakthroughs that is already underway is to make cultured meat. And pretty soon, those scientists tell us that we won't be able to tell the difference between the cultured meat and the real thing, if you like. Now, I was projecting that this wouldn't happen until, 2016, 2017, I think, the first steps. Just a few weeks ago, researchers in the Netherlands invited journalists from all over the world to come and taste the first artificial burger that they had grown in the lab. and it got a pretty mixed review, but it was the first part of what's going to be a very long, slow journey.
Jonathan, I can recall within the last year seeing some polls indicating that people were less concerned about environmental issues than they were maybe 5 or 10 years ago. Do you think those polls reflect the reality? And if so, why is it difficult to get the attention of average people on sustainability issues?
I think two things on that. I think people have been talking about this for so long that I guess an awful lot of people think it's either been sorted out or maybe it isn't as bad as people kept telling us it was. And I think there's a bit of that going on. And secondly, and this is really why I wrote the book, I think a lot of people can't cope with the endless stream of doom and gloom about the future of our world, the degree to which we're now undermining the life support systems on which we depend. And if you keep on just hammering people, hammering with all of this bad news, the brain understandably goes into close down, because what can you do with this data? There's nothing to give you hope about a better world. There's nothing that speaks to you directly about your community, your potential jobs, jobs for your children, new prosperity, new wealth, new innovation, new technology. It's all very downbeat and actually really hard to deal with psychologically. So the whole story for me here is change the mood music about this idea of sustainability. Make the prospect of a sustainable world a really brilliant, exciting, high-tech prospect where people will have a brilliant life as well as do what we need to do about the environment. I don't think we can do it otherwise. I don't think we'll get enough people on board with the power of this potential change.
That was author and environmentalist Jonathan Porritt talking about his book of speculative fiction, The World We Made. That conversation with our colleague Ross Reynolds. It's The Record.